Jay Buxbaum here on behalf of MASC. And MASC has been around for nearly 25 years, addressing the needs of the community in addiction and other challenges that families face throughout the metropolitan and even across the world. And you'd wonder why Jay Buxbaum from Kedem would be promoting MASC. And I'll tell you why, because we're very sensitive here that this is a problem that needs to be addressed, and that drinking responsibly is how you have to do it, if at all. So Jay Buxbaum here telling you that MASC's been around for 25 years almost, addressing 113,000 families over those 25 years. Please, now is the time to donate at maskparents.org. That's maskparents with an S, .org. And if you need help, they are the most wonderful resource to go to, point you in the right direction. Call MASC at 718-758-0400. And don't forget to tune in to the MASC show every Thursday night on Zeb Brenner's WSNR 620 AM and WVIP on the FM at 93.5 in HD2. This is Jay Buxbaum on behalf of MASC, that's right, urging you to please donate today to maskparents.org.
Good evening and welcome back to MASC's weekly radio show on Family Matters. MASC, Mothers and Fathers Aligned, saving kids, kids of all ages and all stages for all mental health struggles, including addiction. If you know somebody that needs a referral for a therapist, an inpatient or outpatient program, or a new school, please give us a call at 718-758-0400. I'll repeat the number, maybe for yourself, a loved one, a neighbor, someone you usually sit next to in shul. Our number again, 718-758-0400. Remember, all calls are kept strictly confidential. You can even call anonymously and ask for whatever it is that you may need, and we will try and guide you to the right program, the right therapist, right psychiatrist, whatever it is you may need. So tonight, I'm really happy to have on with us somebody that's been on several times on a show, and I'm really appreciative that she made time. And that is Dr. Penina Faultman, who is a PA specializing in psychiatry. How are you, Dr. Faultman?
Great, Baruch Hashem. How are you, Rahama? Nice to be back.
I am very good. Yeah, nice to have you back. Thank you for always making the time, both for coming on the radio show and for MASC Parents. Mm-hmm. So Dr. Faultman, the reason that I really wanted to have you on is I know that you specialize in treatment of anxiety, depression, OCD, ADHD, bipolar in children and adults, and many other mental health struggles. And we're in the country, or we're off in the summer traveling or home in day camp with the children of all ages. And the summer is moving along, and we're going to be coming up to a real difficult time when they need to transition children back into school, back into high school, elementary, seminary, getting on a plane. And in general, just, you know, whatever program they may be going to, the transition from total freedom to going back into a very scheduled time with school can bring on a lot of anxiety for many. So I was wondering if you can share some tips of that. I mean, school-based anxiety is real, isn't it?
Oh, it really is.
So what could you offer my listeners?
Okay, so first, Ruchama, it's my honor and privilege to be back here. MASC is a wonderful organization. I've seen firsthand, accounts of the help that you provide and the real need that it fills in our community, especially for someone who works in our community. So hats off to you, Ruchama.
Thank you.
You're doing incredible work. So
Thank
I think
you.
The question, you're welcome. I think the question that you posed was, is anxiety real? And that's a pretty loaded question. Because the answer is yes, 100%. It is real. You know, I see parents, I see children that they struggle with anxiety, and the key word being here is struggle. It's not someone has anxiety and you pop a pill and you're fine. It's something that affects every single aspect, you know, across all spectrums. So anxiety has many different ways of manifesting itself. You know, there's something called psychosomatic, which is just a fancy way of saying that when a person has anxiety, which people tend to think, oh, it's only your mind, it can actually manifest itself in physical symptoms, like the psycho, you know, the psychology part, the somatic having like actual physical symptoms. So a lot of times kids, especially young ones, when they're having difficulty in school, or they're having anxiety about going back to school, or if anything is happening, you know, school-based, a lot of times they won't be saying things like, oh, I have anxiety and I have palpitations and whatever that is. Most of the time they'll focus on the physical symptoms. They're going to say, I don't want to go back. They'll say like, my stomach hurts, or I have a headache. You know, it's very hard for them to kind of put it together and say, I'm having anxiety about school and therefore I don't want to go. So a lot of times you're going to have them come up with, like I'm saying, with physical symptoms. So I've actually had, you know, some parents reach out right at this point. And again, we know about those kids who had anxiety, and the parents reached out now in the summer saying, oh, like my kid is starting to complain about the stomach again. I'm starting to hear, you know, she's saying I have a headache. My son is acting out in day camp. And then with the knowledge that anxiety is a very real thing, especially when they think about going back to school, and the parents sit down with them and say, look, is it, you know, are you worried about going back to school? And that the kid in child-friendly language, and the kid nods and said, yes, I am. Then there's a direction that we can take. So going back to the original one, is anxiety real? Yes. It just has many ways of presenting itself. So not to kind of differentiating between adults presenting with anxiety versus kids presenting with anxiety.
And, you know, Dr. Holtman, let's discuss first what is anxiety, because there is diagnosed anxiety and depression and correlation between both. And then there is anxiety, which everyone in the world now has, you know, since COVID. Mm-hmm. So can you just give a brief definition and description of anxiety, please?
Okay. So you brought up COVID. Well, that's a loaded topic. At this point, I feel like, you know, maybe years ago it used to be that people had anxiety with exception, not the rule. And now I feel it's reverse, that everyone has anxiety, that's a rule. There are some people who just don't suffer from it as much, and that would be the exception, unfortunately, especially with the whole pandemic and everything else that happened. It kind of, I feel like almost, you know, exacerbated anxiety with people who already had it, and it kind of had a newfound fear for people who never did. Separate topic, all the way there. Anxiety it's a fear, it's a worry. It's something that can be described in probably a million different words. People have anxiety. Sometimes they say, I feel like I'm dying. I feel like I can't breathe. A lot of times it's going to be, like we discussed before, psychosomatic symptoms. So they'll say things like, my chest is, you know, my heart is pounding out of my chest. I have a big headache. My stomach is killing me. My hands are shaking. I can't think. I can't focus. I have ADHD. That's automatically where they go, to have ADHD. But really it's, I guess if you want to boil it down to something, it's a fear and it's a worry about things. And then everyone reacts to it in a different way. So, a lot of times anxiety and depression will go hand in hand, because someone is worried about something, then it's really hard to function throughout the day, and then they get depressed about it. And when someone has anxiety, it's pretty hard to like be happy about certain things if the anxiety is like all encompassing and is focused on many different things. So one example that I would give is, you know, I had this client who came to me, and She was worried about her health anxiety, right? Because sometimes it could focus on one thing. And you would think, okay, fine, so whatever, just help her with her health or whatever it is, and then she can go on and live a good life. But what we don't realize is because anxiety can take over every single system in the body, and you can't escape your body from health anxiety, right? So you have a lot of she's every step that she takes, she's worried, oh, if my foot is curving and slightly to the left, does that mean I have XYZ? And of course, you Google every medical condition, you know. Oh, my heart is beating too fast. I must have in some fancy, medical terminology and jargon. So that's how one person presents with that. And then because she was having this kind of anxiety, she wasn't able to function throughout the day. And she was just getting sad and depressed the entire time, just thinking, I can't live like this. So that would be one thing. And yes, anxiety and depression can come together for a different time topic. You can have depression by itself. You can have depression with other like comorbidities as well. But one thing that I think I mentioned the last time I spoke over here is that any kind of new onset of any kind of medical condition should always be preceded by medical, medical exam and ensuring that we're covered medically. What I mean by that is I've had a client who came up probably like a few days ago. And she was going through a lot of depression. She was grieving for something that didn't make sense within its time frame. Like at this point, she should have been over the grieving process, or at least like having gotten through to the other side, and it being more of like a background noise than the foreground. And when testing her thyroid, we realized that she had really high thyroid levels, and that showed that can actually exacerbate the depression and make it worse. So that is something that, that we focus on as well, the medical aspect, and then kind of dividing it again with the mental, and then combining both of them together to give you like a full picture of what's going on.
Thank you, Doctor. I think it's important that you explain what a PA is and how it's different or the same when being a psychiatrist.
Sure. So psychiatrist is an MD, that's a medical doctor, and they go through medical school and then a residency, perhaps sometimes a fellowship, depending on which of the program is. And they're in school for between approximately minimum of like 7, 8, 9, 10 years, and that's not including undergrad. A PA is someone who goes through undergrad, a lot of sciences that they're in there as well, and then they go to a dedicated PA program where they come out in a master's and with usually it's a master's in science. I have a doctorate in medical science and psychiatry, so that's the tacked on, doctor part. But I'm not an MD. I'm a PA, specializing psychiatry. I did additional training as well, and that is my entire focus. Many hours a week doing this.
But you can prescribe meds.
Yes. Well, I would be a pretty lousy psychiatric provider if I can't do any med prescribing. Don't go to people like
Right, I
that.
just want my listeners, right, I just want my listeners to understand that a PA can prescribe the meds.
Yes, we can prescribe everything across the board. And it, including controlled substances, things like Klonopin, like benzos, Klonopin, Xanax. That's a special license, but we're fully licensed to do that. When we say psychiatric provider, it's someone who specifically can prescribe medication. Therapy might be tacked on, but that's all. That's it's not. It's not a therapy based a kind of practice. It's a medication based practice. And I know that you didn't ask this question, Rahama, but I do have to put that in because that's almost like my pet peeve. And where I say that clients who come to me, you're not coming to me to get medication. You're coming to me to receive an evaluation, a comprehensive evaluation to see is medication something that is indicated for you? Is can I help you with medication? Not that you come to me and automatically we can check off meds. It's, and for whatever you're going through, do I think that it can help you? And I've had clients sit in my, at this point, probably infamous blue couch in my office, and I will tell them, I'm sorry, I don't think you're a candidate for medication. I think that therapy at this point is indicated more. I think it's not something that, perhaps can be short term, maybe not long term. And I believe a lot of them were surprised because in their minds it was automatic that, oh, if you go to psychiatrists, you get medication. That's the way it works.
Right. That's why I wanted to really first make them understand what a PA is and that you can't prescribe. But then also, like you said, going to psychiatrist doesn't always mean you're walking out with a prescription.
Correct.
Right. So now let's go back to the anxiety. And a lot of moms or dads suffer from anxiety, and kids could mimic, behaviors. I'd like you to speak about the parents and what their role is with kids in reference to starting school, because parents talk about it also, the kids starting school, I'm nervous about going to seminary, she's going to high school, she's going to first grade, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And even the mom or dad could talk about how nervous they are about it.
Mm-hmm. So when evaluation is done for a child, part of the evaluation, or at least what I do, is that I will speak to the parents together and then the child separately and then the parents separately and then both of them together again. And the reason for that is, especially in a young child, they know their kids. There's so much that you don't get from a 45-minute hour evaluation. And parents who come and say, look, my kid is having anxiety, it's usually not, I haven't seen much of the school year starting and it's like a new onset anxiety. I don't know where it's coming from, what happened. Usually it's something that you see kind of creeping up in the kid, either that or they have like the personality. They're more nervous kids. They're already seeing things. You know, I've had parents come and say like, oh, she was always my kid who was extra worried, a little bit, maybe a little bit clingier. Again, not across the board for everyone, but in certain scenarios. So the parents, the question that you had asked, Rahama, was, what's the parents' role in dealing with anxiety and what can be done for that? So when parents come and we do the evaluation for the child, we determine how much of this can be helped with medication versus not. And especially young children, if there is, you kind of dig a little bit deeper. And I've sometimes called schools and, therapists or anyone else that they're with to get a better picture understanding. And a lot of times you would find that the anxiety might be based on something specific. For example, they're being bullied in school by a certain kid, or they're worried about it because, there's certain subjects that they don't like or they don't do well, or perhaps like the teacher is not getting along with the child or the child's not getting along with the teacher. You can have either one. So if it's a very specific thing that's based in school, then usually the recommendation is to start with, again, this is not across the board, just speaking and it's not specific to the child, it's across the board as well, that usually if it's something in school that they're having an issue with, then the first step would be to address that issue in school. Seems like, pretty common sense, which it is, but it's just sometimes it'll take another person outside or taking a step back from the situation and saying like, whoa, she really acts up in school, or she's really anxious the night before because she worries, she's a stickler for time, and sometimes she's running late to get the bus, and that kind of throws things off. And I think, my listeners will be surprised, or maybe not, by how many of these things that we've been able to address just by getting down to the bottom of the issue, to the core of things, and saying, this is really what's causing it to happen. Let's work on this first. Again, falling back to the thing that the first thing you come to do is not automatically medication. That is usually identified by a school, a school counselor, a teacher, a parent who reaches out. Now, by the time they come to me, usually they have gotten to the point where the anxiety is really all-encompassing, and it's not just focused on one certain area. It's just like they kind of like, I don't want to go back to school. I'm scared to go back to school. And at that point, a small dose of medication might be indicated to kind of relax them, take the edge off of things so they can work on whatever issues they're addressing without them being in a panic, like, in a fight or flight state, in a panic mode. So that's, again, it's hard to talk in general and say this is what it is for everybody, because psychiatry is so nuanced. It's not just sit down, I do an evaluation, here's medication, and goodbye, especially with children. With children, it's a lot more comprehensive, as mentioned before, as well as a lot more collaborative care with the teacher, with the therapist, with the parents, with, the school, the school psychologist, so on is involved. So no one size fits all. But a recommendation for parents is that if your child has anxiety beforehand, then talking to their therapist or gently easing them into the new school year, which with whatever recommendations they have, would be like start now kind of thing. And if this is a new onset, then you're going to go through the entire process regardless of probably reaching out to the school and then reaching out to a therapist and then being guided further from there.
So by the time kids are going into ninth grade or going to Israel, I mean, parents know that they may be suffering already a long time. It just doesn't start usually when they're leaving for Israel.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And majority of the time it is, it's what we call pre-existing. Like they know they have anxiety, and in a lot of cases it's under control. So let's say I have clients come to me saying, look, I know I've been on medication for the past year or two. It works really well for me, but I'm worried about going off to Israel and seminary because what's going to happen there? And my answer usually is, please find a psychiatric provider in Israel. Sometimes they say, well, I just want to, you know, get like a doctor who can just send him a medication from there. And I say, you know, Sheikh, well, I'm 3,000 miles away. This is not, I want to help you from there. And you have to, like, need legally to be able to send a prescription. And if something happens, I would really want to be under the care of a competent doctor. So again, like you were saying, Rahama, we're talking about the fact that they know what they're dealing with. They already have gone through the gauntlet with all these things. And then just to keep on going from Israel. I also want to be able to differentiate between pre-seminary jitters, which is really common, if I just coined that term or not, you know, that going to Israel for an entire year especially if you're happy at home, can be very nerve wracking and can induce a lot of anxiety. And it doesn't automatically mean that medication is indicated for that. A lot of times, majority of the times, girls, once they hit the seminary, will, you know, and things fall into place, will calm down and be able to function throughout the day. But we're talking about a case of extreme anxiety where, like, they're not sleeping at night. They're so scared about, like, crying all the time. Again, the overlap of depression. So that's something that would usually be indicative of a full psychiatric evaluation.
Right. And that's where MASC could come in, and we make referrals to therapists around the world. So the parents really need to start to discuss with their daughters that are going to seminary, their sons that are going over to teach Shiva, and they need to discuss that we can get you a therapist, start the conversation, we can give several referrals in the area where your child is going, and then they know that they have an appointment for when they get there, and they're all set up. Don't wait. I mean, that's the worst thing is, right? When parents wait to see what will happen, because all the therapists are book solid. If you don't make an appointment before they leave, that when they arrive, they know they have that appointment. That alone could be like, you know, a savior, because they're not so nervous. They know they have someone they can go to discuss their anxiety when they get there, correct?
100%. So we're basing this on the fact that we're easing the transition.
Right.
Those are the words, easing the transition, because again, someone who has anxiety, even if they're not on medication, can help, you know, when a new unfamiliar, look, as adults, I believe the majority of us are also at least somewhat uncomfortable with starting a new situation. You know, we crave comfort, we crave familiarity, we like that. So especially for a teenager going off to a different country, especially for young children starting a new unfamiliar environment, for eighth graders going into ninth grade, you know, that we kind of help them with that ease that transition, help them make it as comfortable as possible. And again, even if it's not medication, it's therapy, it's someone that they can reach out to, someone that they can talk with.
Right. And with young children, we recommend that the parents be a professional, not always sending the young child to a therapist, but to go have a consultation with a doctor like Dr. Pultman. Anybody that wants to reach Dr. Tamina Pultman, feel free to give us a call. And I will make sure that Dr. Pultman gets back to you. Our number again, 718-758-0400. Dr. Pultman, when I started MASC 26 years ago, there really were not the numbers that we have today with anxiety. Mm-hmm. You want to talk just as a result of COVID, or, you know, how do you see that it just became, you know, every other person is struggling with anxiety?
I think we started off with this, and then we're kind of ending off with the fact that it's a very, very, very loaded question. And yes, I am a very firm believer that COVID had a lot to do with this, because, like I said initially, for those who had anxiety, it just kicked it off into the stratosphere. There's nothing like a pandemic, a good old-fashioned world pandemic, to make everyone scared. And those who already had anxiety about different things, health. COVID affected every aspect of life. It wasn't just about people who were just worried about, contracting COVID and then sick and going to the ho being hospitalized, but also business, finance, family. All that was affected. So across the board, anxiety went up with those who had it in any area, and then for those who didn't, it was just like an atmosphere of fear and panic and worry, and especially young children. They were home. And we have to give them more credit than we give them about picking up on things and sensing the parents' fear or discomfort, and that in itself could have could have brought forth a whole new generation of people who are very, very worried about things. Because look, a pandemic can happen, and we'd be locked up for months, and who knows what's going to happen from there. So going back to the question, which is yes, I believe that COVID definitely caused anxiety levels to skyrocket. Definitely didn't help those who had it already. It just made it exponentially worse. And I feel like it's bringing up a whole new generation now that very possibly are just more anxiety, full of anxiety.
Right, we're running out of time. I just want to know if you can tell my listeners how important it is to be careful to share, a mom or a dad to share their anxiety in front of their children, because, like you said, how easily these young children pick things up today, and they're aware. They may be 4 years old, they're 7 years old. They hear it, they see it. What do you want to leave my listeners? What message would you like to say to them?
So that, first of all, parents, don't beat yourself up, at least on the aspect that you can control, because a lot of times anxiety is genetic. It's something that can be passed along, the family line. And it's one of the things I ask my clients, your brother, sister, your father, mother, grandparents, do they suffer from anxiety? And the majority of the time, the answer is yes, especially good old-fashioned Jewish guilt. It comes from somewhere, and that big part of the guilt, anxiety, depression kind of line. So a lot of times it can be a component. It doesn't necessarily mean that if your child has anxiety, it's because you showed the anxiety, and therefore they quote unquote got it for you or influenced by you. So sometimes it can be purely genetic, and then obviously there are also the epigenetics and the environmental part of it, where if a kid just sees their parents being worried all the time, they're going to mimic the behavior, especially a kid who's extremely sensitive, and can pick up on nuances. So it's very easy to say don't have anxiety. It's not something that I can, you can just I can say that all I want, but it's something that has to be practiced. So bottom line is, if a parent suffers from anxiety and feels that they can do something about it, then please get the help as well. It's not just about bringing your child to therapy and bringing your child to, psychiatric providers. It's also about taking care of yourself so that you can properly take care of others and help yourself.
Well, it's wonderful having you on. Thank you for all that information. So
You're welcome, Sam.
important. We need to be prepared. Going back to school is a big deal for anyone and everyone. So thank you again for coming on.
You're very welcome. Thank you so much.
All right, and
Take
I
care.
want to wish everyone a very good evening, a beautiful Shabbos, and always remember, hang in, hold on, and virtually still hug tight. Tonight's show is in memory of Rivka Bat Yisroel. Please consider to go online to mathparents.org so we could continue with all the math programs. Thank you, and have a good night.
Are you interested in hosting your own radio show and podcast, or perhaps a TV program? Talkline Network can help you get on the air from 1 hour weekly to 24 hours a day. Ideal for ethnic, foreign language, medical, business, and religious broadcasting. We also have full-time radio stations for lease, as well as FM HD channels. For more information, please call 212-769-1925. That's 212-769-1925, or email zevbrenner@gmail.com.